You're listening to We Are SDS, a podcast from the Department of Science and Technology Studies at University College London. Hi, everybody, and welcome to We Are SDS. I'm your host, Professor Joe Kane. This is episode 22. Hi, everybody, and welcome to We Are STS. It's one of those fundamentals taught to every student. Science is international. It's the same everywhere. It respects no borders. The work is the same no matter where and when it's done. Assessing that idea is a core task in STS. Our philosophers, historians, and sociologists, they work overtime on case studies to explore internationality. In this episode, I hand over the microphone to Beatrice Hahn. She's a student in our Sociology and Politics of Science degree. As an international student, Beatrice is very familiar with borders and with different systems operating in different places. She brings together three others in STS with similar experiences to talk about internationality and its impact on science. This is another contribution from the STS Newsroom 2022. Here in STS, we want to give work experience to as many students as we can in the area of science communication. So each summer, we set up as many paid internships as possible, and we work with our students to create content for publications. We also ask them to create a podcast episode on any subject they choose. We want something STS. But most of all, we want their ideas and creativity. Beatrice starts us off straight away with a set of key questions. I'll just sit back and see how it goes. And I'll see you on the other side.
As an international student who has lived in different countries, it has always been fascinating to me how there can be different scientific explanations for the same thing in different places. But we have always been taught in school that science should only have one choice. And also, ever since the pandemic, we have been bombarded with different scientific policies for the COVID in different places. In today's podcast, we are going to explore the fundamental reasons for these differences. Are they social, cultural, political? Our guest today is Science and Technology Studies Professor Tiago Mata, who has been focusing on the study of political economy, and STS students Isabel Lin and Andrea Lucia. Let's welcome Tiago, Isabel, and Andrea.
I know you also have an international background, so have you ever encountered situations where different countries or places have different scientific explanations for the same thing?
Well, not only from a personal background and history, so I'm Portuguese, which brings in some difference, but, you know, still within the frame of Europe, and formerly, the UK was in the European Union, so we were part of the same political complex. So I think that the differences are not extreme, but as a scholar in STS, science studies has long been noting key differences between governments, between polities, between how different political systems address issues of emerging technologies, public health, social justice. And so it's not surprising that science bifurcates in these extraordinarily complex ways once you start looking at how it's applied and how it's guiding public policy. But certainly the common contrasts involve comparing the United States with the European Union, or comparing the UK and Germany, or with Scandinavia. So the comparisons become ever more stark when you start comparing these countries with the Global South, or with Asia. So I think I think it's a common understanding within science studies that science is not unified and uniform, and science policy in particular, or policy informed by science, very much not so, not uniform.
Yes, I think the understanding of scientific explanations in both the West and the East really differs. And I think it can be most predominantly seen within the understanding of medicine and the body. Because I would say, like, let's talk about like sore throat or having a fever. Like in the West, probably they look at the body as like individual pieces, like individual components, and they'll treat those targeted areas with specific medicine. Whereas for like Eastern medicine, it seems to be as though they treat the body more holistically and see it more of a balance of energy. So let's say you have a sore throat. In the West, you know, sore throat can be caused by like eating fried food. And in the West, it'd be like, oh, maybe just drink water, get yourself hydrated. Whereas in the East, probably most Asians would have heard this thing called hittiness, where the parents would say, oh, because that's a heat-causing food, so then there's an imbalance of heat and cold energy in the body. I'm not too sure how it works, but somehow it does. And there's a lot of emphasis upon like restoring the balance or releasing the air from your body. I'm not sure how exactly what's the scientific explanation behind it, but it works. And plus, and because my mom's side, my maternal side is from Indonesia, there's this thing that I've been told that's a very Indonesian thing, and it's only done there, it's like back scratching. So if you're having like a really bad fever or you're really like bloated, there you take a coin and medical ointment and you scratch the back along the rib cage, and it's meant to release heat. And I thought there's something practiced in the entirety of Asia, but turned out to be it's just Indonesia doing it. And I'm not sure how exactly it works, but it works. And whenever I tell my friends in the West about it, they always look at me rather horrified. So I feel like that's definitely a very different understanding of the body and how medicine works in different countries.
Yeah, I think it's definitely very relatable to all the students with an Asian background, because like the back scratching thing, I think in China, we had this explanation of like it can release heat and maybe moisture inside of a body so that like the fever goes away.
Yeah, yeet hey, right? It's always yeet hey.
Because I went to high school in the States, and the first time I ever go to a school doctor was because I had a period pain. And my mom growing up, and even the doctors has always told me eating something cold like ice cream can cause period pain. And when I went to a doctor in the States, she literally told me to drink some cold water to numb the pain. And I was like, literally mind blown. I cannot explain how shocked I am. It was like my entire belief system just broke at that moment.
Yeah, it's like an existential crisis at the moment.
Ever since the pandemic, different countries have been making different science policies towards it. Why do you think it's the reason?
So I think the science is contributing to some of the differences that you've noted, but those differences that you've noted are differences of policy, not so much differences of knowledge. For the most part, each country's tolerance and capacity to deal with particular harms and tolerance towards risk will be different.
I guess fundamentally, if you look at the past, it's down to the understanding of how to use the natural resources of a given area most effectively. And they really differ depending on climates, because Asia and the climate in the West, even different parts of Asia and the West, differs greatly. So the illnesses or the medical treatments would have to differ depending on the given circumstances. So I think that's probably a main reason why. And then also the different medical herbs or herbs being used for medical treatments would differ greatly because of the climate and how they are grown. So I think that's a very superficial way of explaining why there's such a different understanding of medical science in the different countries.
I think it's a wide range of the different factors that that influence these decisions that have been made by different countries. First of all, there are some countries whose like constitutions don't allow them to introduce like very strong policies from like the night to the day, you know, like overnight. And there are some other countries that have been known to introduce very strict policies. And I think it's just like society has, like, their societies in very specific countries have also been adapting to these certain ways of different countries to adapt not only to, like, COVID policies, but just policies in general, or their, like legal frameworks. I think there's a lot of history as well. I think we know with all the research, all the types of, like, different approaches to science as well, you know, like, the public understanding of science also kind of probably plays a role in the sense of how some countries must take a different approach to issues that have to do with, you know, science or, like, vaccines or restrictions or this or that because of the understanding of what that implies in the country.
Well, I think we have this mutual agreement that all those social, cultural, and political things can have impact on science. But what do you think those impacts are?
So I don't think impact gets it. I think so impact would almost suggest, or you know, impact, influence, those kinds of words suggest that there's this social world out there that is sort of tainting the science, giving it a different color or steering it in different directions. I think social problems are always culturally embedded. And as a result, they are end up posing very different questions to science. And science, understandably, might come up with very different answers to what are different problems. So for instance, in the realm of risk management and how technologies are understood to be risky or not, this is very clear and very well studied. So, and I think that's not so much an impact. The thing itself, the ecosystem, as whatever we want to call it, the polity, is very different. And that's why we can potentially perceive striking differences between sciences.
I think most definitely it can affect the way techno-scientific research is done, because I think depending on the priorities of a given place or the given government, it could really differ and change. Like, let's say there's within a population, there's a certain kind of cancer that's more common. You can see that the government will probably invest more money into the research of that cancer. And it really shows at that point that research, medical research, is really dependent upon investment, monetary investment. And the reason why different monies are invested into different research fields would really be because of the priorities and what exactly is the most beneficial to the society, or how the politicians would generalize it as a whole.
Well, I would definitely say everything combined. I think everything plays a role in everything, really. And there is a lot, obviously, of political. Whenever you talk about politics, it's very cultural and social either way. So I would say they all influence each other. I think they have a very strong impact on science, especially politics as well. Because obviously, when we're talking about politics, we're talking about, like, funding towards research, funding towards tech and science. So definitely a very big impact. I would say all three of them, but also speaking specifically about politics and the government and, like, how funding works and, like, you know, like, the policies that are being made, like, who decides this. So a very big impact for sure.
So I know you don't like the word impact, so I'm just going to change the next question real quick. So, to what extent do you think science is related to those factors? Do you think science still have autonomy?
It's questionable whether science ever had autonomy, because science was always done in society. So there was always done by people with views, with agendas, with beliefs, with what changes is the kinds of embeddedness that science is attached to. At the moment, feels a bit like a hybrid, feels a bit like an attempt to have the state in a much more managerial role whilst leaving the execution to the private sector. So the government has agenda setting through grand challenges and missions and things of that sort. But I think that's a result of an awareness that science could have been more useful to solving the problems that we have now than it has been, in terms of addressing issues of global warming, social injustice?
Well, the thing is, like, when you talk about, like, science autonomy, it's a very big conversation, because you talk, you know, about, like, you know, the scientific autonomy, about, like, the scientist autonomy, which can also create a lot of tension. And if it's not regulated well enough, it could have some negative impacts as well. So I think it has to be regulated to some point, but at the same time, I do think that whatever is regulating this or whatever is intervening in this should be free of any like political agenda, and should definitely kind of like put science and research and first.
Do you think those influences are made intentionally, or do you think it's just a natural link between science and society and all those outside factors?
I do think that there is some type of, it just happens because that's the way kind of like it happens. But I also believe that there's a big, like strong influence in like how these decisions are made. I would say it's a bit of both, but definitely it's intentional. When we talk about like tension between politics and science, there's, you know, it's something that exists. So I do believe that some specific policies are made with a specific intention or a specific goal in mind that will probably most likely benefit, you know, politics over science.
What do you think are the agendas when people trying to maneuver science through outside factors?
I definitely think that economic growth is probably one of the biggest agendas we have today. So I would go with that one first. And also, I do think that we still have a very big dynamic of, you know, like power dynamic, you know, trying to reach for the stars, trying to be at the top of the pyramid, kind of, you know, with power and with more research or with more. So I do think that the agenda varies.
The question is, who sets the agenda and how overbearing is the agenda on the work of scientists? There's nothing wrong for science for science sake, but that's not the majority of what science does or what scientists do. And there's a lot of work that has in view, maybe not immediate commercial applications, but something out there, a puzzle out there in the world. And having an awareness of what problems get prioritized, and particularly at a policy level, deciding which problems deserve primary support, I think those things are fundamental. And but we need to think very hard about how those very broad statements of priority, those very broad challenges, get translated into something that makes sense for science, and that autonomy is preserved to some extent because scientists do know best on certain aspects of their work. And they need to have that freedom to pursue the puzzles.
Is there any way that you think can minimize those outside influence? Oh, I know you don't like the word, but like those outside factors.
I don't think we can in the present time. I cannot think of any political economy in the 21st century where you would have a gift to science to do whatever it feels like it should. The fiscal state, the way it is, particularly in the North, something that would be structural, something that would be a kind of a substantial change in the way science is organized, then money would be given for scientists to pursue their interests without any account. I think that would be, it just seems impossible to conceive. We have to think in terms of the world we have and the world we have, these expenses, and the value for that taxpayer money needs to be justified. And
I'm not sure I have an answer for that right now. I do think that it will always have an influence in it, because it's kind of like a circle, you know, something is supporting something that is supporting something else, and it just becomes like a little circle of like the never-ending circle, that everything plays a role in everything else. I would say that where we are now, I don't see it not being influenced.
I feel like that you're very strong with the opinion that science are combining with all those non-science aspects. Do you think those non-science aspects can produce any benefit?
And I think we most predominantly can see it in the speed in which like COVID-19 vaccine was developed, you know, because everyone was worried about how can a vaccine be developed that quickly. But then we must understand that both public and private factors were investing money. Governments were investing money. Pharmaceutical companies were investing money to speed up the process. And it really shows that the thing that's gatekeeping most research fields is probably investment. And this ties it nicely into a very nice STS concept called social technical imaginaries, which is a concept which talks about the direction of techno-scientific research and who has the authority to determine it.
So our economies for the last, say, 30 years, to throw a number, have run on knowledge. You can't think of an advanced economy now that is not staffed by people with high degrees. Most businesses, because of digital technologies, because of biotech of one form or another, require highly qualified staff. And then highly qualified staff is asked regularly to update and adapt and adopt new technologies all the time. So it's hard to think how we can decouple those two things. The world economy runs on technology and knowledge. It is the source of its acceleration of whatever speed it might be having at any point in time. And so science is in the thick of it all the time. And so I can't think of a way to build a wall that will be high enough.
We will have a 1 minute break here and we will come back to discuss more science policies after the break. Welcome back. Me and Isabel will continue to talk about science policy problems regarding outside influence on science. Do you think that science should be influenced by those outside factors?
I think there needs to be a better balance on how science can be influenced, because we can see that a lot of the authority held for techno-scientific research is still predominantly by private companies and the government to a large extent. However, the society, which is the vast majority of us, basically the public, we do not have much say on which direction of the research it is being done. And most importantly, these pharmaceutical companies and the government, they're picking to invest research in things that are most financially beneficial to them. Because you can see, like, it's more beneficial for a pharmaceutical company to develop, let's say, a medical pill that you have to take daily, because that means you have to constantly purchase it, as opposed to, like, let's say, like a vaccine which you only take yearly, which is why you can see like things like a HIV vaccine is still in progress, and how like pharmaceutical companies have really exploited the development of insulin, because insulin was not meant to be the creator of insulin, or rather the researcher who discovered it as a treatment for diabetes, didn't want it to be an expensive option, wanted it to be something very affordable, and didn't patent it. However, the private pharmaceutical companies, they took this invention, patented it, and could, because of this patent, they can charge like exorbitant amount of money for it. And you can see like the power of the patent and intellectual property. So I think there needs to be some sort of more contemporary reworking of global like agreements and policy regarding how the pricing of medical treatments, for sure.
You think those balance can be done by regulation, don't you? What kind of policies or ways do you think will help?
I think it's the issue with regulation, because a lot of things, like especially on the global scale, it's not legally binding because of national sovereignty. However, I feel like within individual countries, they can definitely exert more power to pharmaceutical companies, but they have to do it in a collaborative manner. They, in terms of like what regulations, I think would work. As someone who does STS, I think most definitely they need to target the pricing of medical treatments and make pharmaceutical companies justify why are they charging for the prices that they are charging. Because a lot of times, because now because privatization means they have no accountability, there's less accountability, there's less transparency regarding how the systems work. And I think it needs to be a more collaborative effort between both the public institutions like governments and the private companies like pharmaceutical company in order to reach like some form of agreement. Because in order to get some form of, to ensure that pharmaceutical companies are not charging excessive amounts for medical treatment that people need on the daily.
How do you think will the intertwining relationship between science and other aspects affect policymaking?
I think what we can see, especially in like popular culture is a reflection of the public's understanding of predominant social cultural movements. So it can be a reflection of what are the current society's fears regarding science and techno-scientific research direction. I think it can definitely influence public interest in that specific field. And like, you know, when you look at dystopian fiction, a lot of dystopian fiction always revolve around like science going out of control or the scientists going out of control. And it's a trope that has been very common since the mid-20th century around the Cold War. So you can see that even in the modern day, like it's still something that still persists within this kind of literature. And it really reveals like the fears the public have regarding science because of this lack of transparency.
What kind of difficulties can you see being there in the regulation process?
I think in terms of regulation, it's going to be difficult because a lot of companies are self-regulatory. So they operate within their own specific systems. So in order for governments to intervene, I think it shows that they need more scientists and more scientific committees within the given government. Because I think right now a lot of governments, their understanding of science is very superficial and there isn't an interest to be more invested in science. Because as long as it brings in the money, they don't really enforce too strictly of policies upon them. Because it also brings up a question of whether they're stifling scientific progress, because in the UK at least, there's a lot of emphasis on blue sky thinking as well, blue sky research. So basically it's research without any end goal or any objective. It's just research for the sake of research and hoping that maybe they would stumble upon like a eureka moment. So in terms of policy, I think governments definitely need to have more scientists in the government, more scientific committees, so that science is just being discussed more frequently within the government, because especially in the modern era where there's a lot of scientific research going on, there's a lot of technology research going on, I think the government needs to modernize in order to adapt to these changing times, because a lot of their policies are still very relevant to Cold War era and the modern day. The kind of issues that we're facing with, you know, cybersecurity as well is very different from the issues faced in those days.
Opinions can be different. Tiago believes that there is a natural link between science, society, culture, and politics, whereas Isabel believes that there is a strong influence. And Andrea is kind of in the middle, believing that there can be both intentional and natural link/influence. But it cannot be denied and is mutually agreed that there is a relationship between science and outside influences. Science is never in autonomy. The relationship has been here and will always be, based on which science policies can vary. This relationship can both be positive and negative. With political and economic agendas, science can be developed but as well as tainted. Therefore, all three believe that such influence/relationship should be regulated. However, the process can be difficult, especially when a lot of the companies are transnational now, commented by Isabel. Moreover, the policymakers might not have enough knowledge to oversee the private sector, which leads to the regulation ending up being an inside job of the private companies. Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast, and thank you again to Tiago, Isabel, and Andrea.
I find listening to conversations like this one really challenge my assumptions about what's typical and what isn't. That, I suspect, was Beatrice's point. And I love being drawn into language conversations like, what's the difference between saying science and society or science is society? And you may not know that Beatrice did most of her work on this podcast at long distance, owing to summer work half a world away. That's extra impressive. If you know someone who might like to study with us, just ask them to get in touch. Maybe it's to explore stories like this one. Maybe it's philosophy of science, or sociology, or science policy. Or maybe, just maybe, it's to study history of science, like me. They all fit under the umbrella of Science and Technology Studies, or STS. And if you want to know more about STS Alchemy, just search online for UCL, STS, and Alchemy. It's free, and it's packed with student-written material. Today's music included Rollin' at Five by Kevin MacLeod. That's available at the website filmmusic.io. We Are STS is a production of the Department of Science and Technology Studies at University College London. If you want to find out more about the show, listen to past episodes, or just give us some feedback, visit us online. Here's the address. It's ucl.ac.uk/STS/podcast. That's it for today. Thanks for coming along. Until next time, everybody, just remember, there's knowledge to be found just about everywhere, and that together, we are STS. Bye now. You've been listening to We Are STS, a podcast from the Department of Science and Technology Studies at University College London. Subscribe to the show and join us online. The address, ucl.ac.uk/STS/podcast.